This is KBOO Portland. It is 10 a.m. We'll be back in just a minute with Michael Rupert of From the Wilderness.
Planes hit in New York City, and thousands now are dead. It was Arab terrorists, so this is what you said. Well, if that is the truth, then what have you got to hide? What were you doing on the day all those people died? Where the f*** were the fighter jets ordered by the FAA? What is your explanation for what you were heard to say when you told the Air Force to stand down, not to intercept? Did you plan to let it happen, or are you just inept? There's some distressing information, sir, which I think should be explained. Just which things have been lost, and just what has been gained. Like the thousands of put options bought days before the crash. If the money were collected, it'd make quite a pretty stash. And the only stocks they bought were American and United. Deutsche Bank knows the answer, but the names have not been cited. And is it just coincidence that this firm in the private sector was once run by Fuzzy Krongard, now CIA director? And I am left to wonder, as the flames are rising higher, was this our latest Lusitania, or another Reichstag fire?
All right, a little bit of Dave Rovix there, because it's the best little summary of some of the important parts of 9/11 set to music that I've found in the past 3 years. Good morning. Welcome to People Rise Up's final Fall 2004 Pledge Drive show. We got a huge goal today. We got a good match to do, and you should keep those phones ringing at 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266. It is my great pleasure to continue talking about 9/11 during Pledge Drive. We had Paul Thompson 2 weeks ago talking about his new book, The Terror Timeline. And today I'm very happy to bring back to KBOO's airwaves Michael Rupert, publisher of From the Wilderness, on the line at fromthewilderness.com, and most recently author of Crossing the Rubicon, The Decline of the American Empire at the End of the Age of Oil. Welcome back to our airwaves, Mike.
It's a pleasure to be with you and talking to everybody I love up there in Portland.
Cool. Well, the book is available through you guys right now, but not quite yet in bookstores. So most people probably haven't gotten a copy of this yet. We have copies to give away for Pledge Drive, so we'll hope you'll take advantage of that. And let's just sort of dive in. The main assertion in the eyes of many folks I've already spoken with about the book, that you make, and I'm reading here from the book announcement, is, quote, "I will name Vice President Richard Cheney as the prime suspect in the mass murders of 9/11 and will establish that not only was he a planner in the attacks, but also that on the day of the attacks, he was running a completely separate command, control, and communication system which was superseding any orders being issued by the FAA, the Pentagon, or the White House Situation Room." Now, obviously, this has to all take place in the context of the war games. So with that as an introduction, I would just say kind of begin explaining a little more.
Okay. Yes, the war games are the keyhole into which you insert one question that unlocks the door to everything else about September the 11th. What I've clearly documented in the book is that on the morning of September the 11th, there were three and possibly four separate war games, war game exercises involving the United States Air Force, various levels of command, whether it was NORAD, the Joint Chiefs, or operations controlled by the Vice President, which all involved hijack scenarios, and none of these have been or were even addressed, explained or addressed by the so-called independent commission, the Kane Commission. The three drills were Vigilant Guardian, Vigilant Warrior, and Northern Vigilance, and there's possibly a fourth called Northern Guardian. But some of the problems with identifying what was what are the fact that is the fact that NORAD had told me repeatedly, and I include the email correspondence with NORAD in the book, that details about the drills were classified top secret. However, there were a number of press stories that appeared, some initially right after the attacks and some last spring, in publications like Aviation Week and Space Technology, the Toronto Star, USA Today. I mean, very credible sources wherein reporters for those entities had obtained statements from various personnel, whether it was the Northeast Air Defense Sector, NORAD headquarters, First Air Force headquarters, confirming that these separate games existed. And there was a lot of disingenuous misleading done by NORAD and the White House in the fact that they claimed on their official statements, even to the 9/11 Commission, that one exercise, that's Northern Vigilance, was something other than what it was. Northern Vigilance was, in fact, a drill which moved a significant unknown number of fighter aircraft out of the Northeast Air Defense Sector and transferred them to Northern Canada and Western Alaska for a drill on 9/11 that had to do with Russian bombers coming over the pole. I mean, we haven't had to worry about that for quite a while. Mm-hmm. But there was another drill, a Vigilant Guardian, which I have clearly established based on press reports and on-the-record statements by Air Force personnel and FAA personnel, was a hijack drill, and that it involved the insertion of false radar injects onto the screens of the FAA air traffic controllers and Air Force. And then, lo and behold, in Richard Clark's book, Against All Enemies, he quotes Acting Joint Chiefs Chairman Richard Myers as saying that on the day of 9/11, they were in the middle of a drill called Vigilant Warrior. And I have obtained an on-the-record email from a major in the U.S. Air Force, Don Arias, a spokesman for First Air Force, reading from a NORAD manual saying, according to that name, what it was a live-fly hijack exercise taking place on the morning of 9/11. That means actual aircraft were up and posing as simulated hijacks. And the bottom line to all of that, and this is confirmed again through a number of on-the-record sources, is that when the hijackings first began, when the attacks first began, the FAA personnel and the Air Force personnel had as many as 22 possible hijackings in progress with only 8 fighters, and they have to fly in pairs, available to scramble. And they didn't know where to send them. They couldn't tell the real hijacks from the games, and that effectively paralyzed the entire fighter response system on 9/11. By the same token, through deconstructing thousands of pages of testimony and records showing the movement of key people, especially Dick Cheney, we find that Dick Cheney was in the Presidential Emergency Operations Center, which is a bunker below the White House, run by the Secret Service, among others, and that it had a completely separate and probably a better command and control system than anybody else had. They had the FAA radars. They had complete override ability. And that this was where Cheney was issuing orders throughout the attacks to fulfill a prophecy, which was let one happen and stop the rest.
Now, I have about 8 very detailed questions based on those few opening moments there. But the one... And there's a couple of them that I'm really curious about, but I think we need a little bit more explanation of how these fairly routine and standard military war game exercises that happen all the time are linked to who is essentially a civilian, you know, second in head of government, who is not a military person. Can you explain why the military may have been working through the White House in the context of these war games?
Well, sure. I mean, first of all, the National Command Authority, which is the chain of command, is the president, in his absence, the vice president, secretary of defense, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. If we go back historically, we find that in May of 2001, the White House issued a directive placing the vice president, Dick Cheney, in charge of all war games preparations for attacks using weapons of mass destruction, with FEMA as his, as the agency implementing on his behalf. But the wording of that document was very clear that Cheney was the coordinator. Now, you obviously brought up a good question. There are several which follow from the war games. Number one, is like, what idiot would schedule three separate war games to, you know, that would systematically destroy the system's ability to respond on the same day at a time when the system was flooded with warnings, and I mean flooded, that somebody was going to hijack airliners to use them as weapons. That's beyond stupid, and that was a major quest for me to find out who was in charge. When I got to the Joint Chiefs, and of course I asked all of these people. I'm an investigator, a detective, a journalist, and I went to all these people and asked, and nobody would answer the question. Nobody. Then I discovered another war game, which did not involve the military, but it involved the Department of Health and Human Services and the Department of Justice, called Tripod 2, which was a biowarfare exercise set up to take place on Manhattan's Pier 29. On the day after 9/11, but coincidentally, they were just conveniently setting up all this wonderful communications equipment on the morning of 9/11, and they were in a position to take over the on-site command post responsibility. So then the question became, who coordinates war games not only involving the military but civilian agencies? And there you have to go to the White House. And there was and remains a direct line showing that that the vice president's office, working through the Office of National Preparedness, of which he was placed in charge, was really the coordinator for all the war games.
Well, we'll get back to more details about this, but we're going to have to take our first pitch break at the moment. But your revelations about Tripod, and it's not just you, but you've put a lot of this stuff together in one place, may be the explanation for an interview that Dan Rather conducted with a FEMA person just following 9/11. And the FEMA person referred to being in New York before 9/11.
Yeah, no, I'll have to correct you on that, because that turned out to be a very bad dead end and a very dangerous piece of disinformation.
Oh, so it doesn't relate to Tripod?
No.
In your opinion, okay.
No, that was an interview with Hyannis Fire Department, a guy by the name of Tom Kennedy, who misspoke. I mean, I saw this, and what I do is I check everything out before I run with it. That's how you avoid being embarrassed. And I called the Hyannis Fire Department, and there are videos of the whole Hyannis Fire Department leaving as a FEMA response team on the night of September the 11th. He arrived in New York, went straight to work, and had been working for 4 days when he was interviewed. He was just tired. For him, it was Monday morning when he got to New York. That was just the start of his work week. He was not there, but FEMA was there. But if you run with Kennedy, anybody who does that is going to get totally discredited, and that's why you have to be very thorough to double and triple check any fact before you run with it.
I had thought that the person was FEMA and not Hyannis. Anyway, we'll get back to more details about Crossing the Rubicon. The author, Michael Rupert, of From the Wilderness, is here with us for Pledge Drive.